Hi everyone, I'm Greg Lowe from Down Under in Australia. Cosmos Down Under is a production from SQL Down Under. Cosmos DB is a trademark of Microsoft Corporation. Opinions and views expressed in the podcast are individual and don't necessarily reflect the opinions and views of SQL Down Under or of Microsoft Corporation.
Introducing Show 10 with guest Tara Bhatia. Welcome. Our guest today is Tara Bhatia. Tara is a product manager on the Azure Cosmos DB team and works on the elasticity features for the product. This includes areas like partition merge, auto scale, hierarchical partition keys, and burst capacity. So welcome, Tara.
Hey, Greg. Nice to meet you here today. Super excited to be on the show, and it's been great getting to know you the past few weeks.
Awesome. Thank you. Yes, I had to... For those that don't know, I've had a few questions lately trying to sort out how burst capacity works, but we'll come to that a little bit later. And so Tara and friends have been helpful with that. Hey, but listen, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you come to be involved with the Cosmos team in the first place.
Sure, yeah, sounds good. So I actually started, I started full-time on Cosmos DB and at Microsoft when I graduated college. So actually graduated university 2022, so it hasn't been too long. But I graduated in 2022. I started working on the Cosmos DB team as a product manager in the elasticity space in August of 2022. So it's been not quite 2 years, but over a year. But before yep. that, I actually interned on the team twice. So I was an intern in the 2020 summer. I worked with Thomas Weiss. Don't know if you know him. Yeah, I think he was also an MVP. And then yeah. I also came back the following summer in 2021 because I loved the team so much. And
they must have liked you because you're back.
Yeah, now I'm back full time. So it's been nice. It's been great. I love working with everyone on the team. I think the product is in really good shape, and we have such amazing customers that are fully invested in the product. So it definitely makes working a lot more fun.
Yeah. No, it's good. I think you've landed in a pretty good team there, actually. Mm-hmm. So listen, going through the areas that you work with mostly, I think the one that's been out the door a bit lately, of course, are hierarchical partition keys. Mm-hmm. And so maybe if we start there and then sort of think about, like, I actually think they've been a wonderful addition to the product. But I suppose in your words, like, why do they matter?
Yeah, hierarchical partition keys is great if you want to go over that 20 GB limit of data. So if you ran into that where you're trying to scale your workload pretty high and you run into that 20 GB limit, then
on the logical partition size.
On the logical partition size, not physical. Then this is like a great workaround for, or a great feature to add in your workload. So if you want to scale your workload very high, but you also don't want to run into like cross partition queries, like synthetic keys might have you run into, then hierarchical partition keys are a great workaround for that. So if you want to scale your workload higher and you're often querying by your that first level of your partition key, then definitely take a look at hierarchical partition keys. It'll probably there's less fan out, so you're not doing as many cross partition queries as well.
Yeah. And so, look, a lot of people were implementing this manually before by creating some sort of synthetic key or things like that. Yeah, it was a pretty common approach. Is, to me, the number one use case seemed to be something more like multi-tenant systems or things like that, where maybe I'm a software house and I have a tenant ID in every single document that's stored. And is that the typical first level of a hierarchical partition key then?
Yeah, if you have a lot of tenants, then we definitely want that first level. A thing that a lot of our customers have been struggling with is, even though you have multiple levels of keys in your hierarchical partition key, each level should be pretty, it should still follow what we say is a good partition key in general. So if your first level is tenant ID, but you only have let's say, 5 tenants, then you're going to run into some issues. But if you have, like, let's say, 1,000, like, lots of tenants, and it's a pretty cardinal value in your workload, then that's a great first level.
Yeah, because I think usually when we look at the rules for good petition keys, because, of course, that choosing those is an important thing in Cosmos DB containers at all. But yeah, usually we look at things that have a fairly high cardinality compared to what we see in other sort of database products and so on. But it's just really important to sort of spread things round a bit, but to still try and avoid cross-partition queries, of course.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And cross-partition queries aren't necessarily always a bad thing, but they do, they can increase your RU cost. So we'll definitely try to play with hierarchical partition keys. And if you are constantly querying by something in that, that first level value in your hierarchical partition key, then that's probably a better setup than the just the synthetic key.
And yeah, it's a good point you made there too, is that it's not just the, nowadays, it's not just the time it takes to execute the query, it's the cost of executing the query in terms of the number of request units and so on, ends up higher if you do that. And of course, if you, one of the questions always comes up, if I have a hierarchical partition key on field A, B, and C, and then I'm querying just on field B, that's, you know, we're still going to end up with a cross-partition query, right?
Right, right. Yeah, you always want to make sure that your queries also include that first level of whatever you have. And if you do have, like, let's say you have one level and you only need two of the levels, it's always good just to add, like, that unique ID value as your very last level to ensure that you can never exceed that 20 GB logical partition limit.
Indeed. But it becomes super critical in any of these things to always make sure nearly all the time that the whatever that first column is, the first field is there, that, that that's usually part of your query most of the time. So, no, that's really good. And so in terms of containers, there's nothing simple at the moment to, like, if let's say I had a container that has a synthetic partition key, because I did that before there were hierarchical partition keys. I suppose the question is, what do you think is the best way to change the container so that it ends up with the right partition key?
Yeah, so right now we have a workaround for this. It's basically where you can copy all of your container's data to another container within that same account. And because it would be to a new container, you can then reset your throughput, and you can also reset your partition key on that. So it's not exactly an in-place partition key change, but I think we're also coming up, if it's not already out, that, like, we'll hopefully have some type of experience where users can do that on the portal itself.
Yeah, I think it's one of the things that I often think in Cosmos DB, a very common mistake that people make early on is to choose the wrong partition key, and then they go, how do I fix it, you know, once once they realize that's an issue. And the answer for most at the moment has been to create another container. I mean, and so alternately, copy the data out somewhere else, delete this one, you know, recreate a container with the right key and pull all the data back in and so on. But yeah, it'd be awesome if there was a built-in experience that did that sort of thing automatically for people, I think. Yeah,
yeah, I agree. It's probably one of the biggest pain points Cosmos DB has.
No, that's good. And so, listen, on a similar note to that, a thing that's in preview at the moment, of course, is the ability to do partition merges as well. And so what's appeared so far in that?
Yeah, so with partition merge, just for context, if you have partitions that have less than 3,000 RUs allocated to it and also have less than 20 GB of storage on it, then you can basically use partition merge to merge those unused partitions and reach a higher scalability on the partitions than before. So let's say you had a small container and then you decided to, let's say you have a small container of like 1,000 RUs on just one partition, and then let's say you scale up to...
In terms of allocated throughput or in terms of actual throughput?
Allocated throughput. So like you do specify throughput. Let's say you start off with a small collection and then you scale up to, let's say, 100,000 RUs. So each physical partition would now have 10,000 RUs on it. And then now you have these 10 partitions all with 10,000 RUs on it. Then let's say you scale back to the 1,000 RUs you were originally at. Now that 1,000 RUs will get split amongst those 10 partitions. So that's like 100 RUs per partition. And you're probably going to run into a bunch of throttles if each partition only has 100 RUs on it. So to actually reduce that physical partition count, you can now use partition merge on it.
Which is the key thing you're doing here, isn't it? It's really reducing the physical partition count. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. And I think before it was really hard for a lot of our customers to even figure out how many partitions they had, how many physical partitions they had. So now we also have like new metrics in Azure Portal.
I was about to say, yes, that is the right spot to go and find out because, rather than guessing, you know, there is real info there. So if we, in the account, we go to the metrics area, then what are the things that we're looking at in there?
Yeah, so in the metrics area, you can look at your physical partition count, and that'll tell you how many partitions do I actually have? Because a lot of users also don't know when we increase our offer, what that's doing to our physical partition count. Like, is it splitting? Is it not? So that'll tell you how many partitions you currently have, and you can also look at how much throughput is on each of those physical partitions.
Yeah, so you can pick the metric where you say it's the throughput I want to look at, and then I can say the dimension I want to break that down by physical partition ID, and that'll show it to us.
Yeah, and then you can also see the storage on top of that as well for each partition. So if you have less than 20 GB and you have less than 3,000 RUs on partitions, then those are the ones that would end up getting merged.
I did briefly try this the other day, and I noticed it wasn't an instantaneous thing. It seemed to take a little while to apply. Is that normal?
That's true. Yeah, it takes a while. It's a background operation though, so there's no downtime to your workload.
Okay. So you can still use it in the meantime. It doesn't. Yeah, I did wonder if it prevented you from using it in the meantime or not. So.
Yeah, it does not. So it's a background operation that does take some time, and we're working on making the like progress and activity log of it more descriptive for our users in the future.
Yeah, and so is there a way at the moment to sort of track the process of that merging while it's going on? Is it basically activity log entries or?
Right now, it's just activity log entries, but we're working on making it more descriptive and actually letting the user know like which partitions have already been merged and which ones are still in the progress.
And is this a NoSQL thing only, or does it apply across the board? Or
So this is for NoSQL and Mongo.
And Mongo at present. Okay. Yep. That's good. Now, are there any, I think also from memory, there were some limitations of things that if you're using, then you can't actually do that as well. So what sort of things block you out from being able to do that?
Yeah, so in terms of SDKs, you have to be on the emerge-proof SDK. So that means you have to be upgraded to a certain version. I think it's like 3.27 or higher for .NET. And then for Java, there's also a specific version that you would have to be on. And then we have a beta version for JavaScript that's out as well. So those are the SDKs. For Mongo, you have to be on a current version of Mongo as well. When it comes to other connectors that you're using, so if you're currently on using the point-in-time restore feature or analytical store,
The analytical store was the one that I think was the one that I was most concerned about. So if that's enabled, then that prevents you from doing it. So you need to sort of tear that down, do the change, and then set it back up again.
Yeah, unfortunately, you won't be able to turn it back on again if you turn it off and then perform the merge. So there are quite a few limitations that we're working through.
I think by turning it on, I was meaning reestablishing it from scratch. Is that...
Turning on the analytical store?
Analytical store,
Yeah, I believe thought if you turn it off, do the merge, and then turn, you wouldn't be able to turn on Analytical Store again.
Yeah, I was imagining you couldn't re-enable it, but I just thought you might be able to, if you like removed it completely, you did the merge, and then you just said, look, I want to set it up again like it was never there. I was hoping that would work. But
yeah, I'm not quite sure. It's still like, yeah, in general, we're trying to get rid of these, or not rid of these, but like cater towards these limitations and make it better for our users.
No, that's good. And any, I suppose, limitations, I think there was something around whether it worked with serverless or not. And so I think from memory, I think serverless was one of the things that was a bit of an issue. And there was also something about, I think from memory, write regions as well. I think you had to have only a single write region.
That's right. Yeah.
It'd just get too complicated. Yeah.
Yeah. For multi-region writes, it's not currently available either.
Hmm. Yep. No, that's all good. And the, another thing that's in your area at the moment, of course, is autoscale. And just in general, I mean, sounds like a good thing. Why wouldn't I want it on all the time?
So honestly, I would say, like, so you're saying autoscale or the new autoscale per region?
Just autoscale in general, first up, I suppose.
Got it. So autoscale is great if you have unpredictable workloads that spike up and down, and you can't really predict one flat level of like provisioned RUs for on our manual. So with that being said, autoscale is expensive. We have that 1.5x multiplier if you're on autoscale versus if you're on manual. There is no extra 1.5x charge.
So this is you only pay for that extra when it's needed, but you pay more when it is using it, I suppose, you're saying.
Exactly.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah, so autoscale gives you that 10x range of scaling. That's really nice if you have an unpredictable workload, which can be at low usage sometimes and higher usage in other times. So if you have this type of spiky workload, autoscale might be a better fit for you than the manual provision throughput.
Yeah.
And when customers
The manual thing you'd use if you've got, what do they say, predictable or steady throughput requirements?
Yeah. We usually, like, the rule of thumb is, like, if you have, I think if over time, all of your normalized RU consumption, which is also on the Azure Portal Metrics, is above 66% on average, then manual might be better for you. But if it's not, and if it's varying from, like, let's say 30% to 100% to 70%, and, like, has the average is lower than 66%, then autoscale would be a better billing model for you.
No, in good. And so I think when people are starting out, do you think they'd normally start with autoscale when they're doing development or something like that? Or just even, I suppose, just using a serverless thing? I'm just trying to think where people are just trying to minimize development costs, you know, or costs of the service while they're doing development.
I would definitely say to, if you are just trying it out, like I said, with autoscale, if you start, you can scale from anywhere from, like, I think it's like 100 to 1000 RUs. But if you want to just use it for testing purposes, then I think serverless and also making use of our free tier would be a great first step.
We should mention too, because I don't think we've mentioned that previously. It may have been in the show with Mark. The keep in mind there is that free tier, which is great value. Actually, I have one of those configured, and from memory, that's you can set up one of those per subscription. I think it was that the restriction.
I believe so. Would have to.
Yeah, I think it is. Check. Yeah, yeah. Well, we can certainly check anyway. But I think it was limited to about 1,000 RUs or something like that. Like it had some number like that. But yeah, this is perfect for people to get and just try it and have a go. It's I'm mindful that the Azure SQL Database has also recently added a sort of a free one per subscription, and it's just a great option for people trying things out and so on. So Because I think, yeah, people always sort of worry when they're dabbling with some of these things, you know, as to whether they'll end up with big bills and so on. So,
hi, this is Greg coming to you from another time and place. If you have a data-related project that needs to get off to a great start with the right architecture, or if you have an existing project that's off the rails, why not contact us? We help organizations of all sizes, from startups to tier one financials, and we can help you too. Check us out at sqldownunder.com.
Mm-hmm. And so in terms of autoscale, you were sort of hinting towards there were changes recently in terms of this, or?
Yeah, so we actually have a new private or public preview feature that was released called Autoscale Provision per Partition. It's also known as dynamic scaling. So with this feature, previously in the autoscale billing model, if any of your partitions reached, like, let's say 100% utilization, then you would be charged for that 100%, like the max utilization you had in the hour. And this is on a per partition basis.
So it's each hour, the maximum per hour is what's charged.
Yeah. And then if you add like regions on top of that, then you're getting charged for the highest utilization across all of your regions. So let's say
Tricky too, because so if you've got a busy region and you've got a few that are not busy at all, but you're then paying for the highest of the busiest region, but you're paying that for each region. Okay. Yep.
Yeah, it does. It gets pretty pricey. So this is our feature that hopefully relaxes these high costs on Cosmos DB. So I think Cosmos DB has gotten very high cost perception in the past, so now we're trying to fix that with this new feature as well. So
lots of things happening to try and fix that. That's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think you do want people to just try and dabble and do things, and absolutely. So that actually sounds like a really good addition. And the other one that we've talked about a bit recently, because I was struggling to get my head around exactly how it worked, but the burst capacity, tell us about that.
Yeah, so burst capacity, again, is similar to partition merge. If you have partitions that are under 3,000 RUs, then this could be super beneficial for you. And burst capacity will take, if any of your partitions are idle for a maximum of 5 minutes, then it'll allow you to use that unused RUs in the time that you were idle, and allow you to go over whatever your partitions are allocated, I think to a maximum of 3,000.
Yeah, it was about 3,000 RUs a second. Yeah, that was I think one of the things that was sort of surprising me is the two concepts there. One is that it's being reassessed all the time at 5 minute intervals, which even after I read the documentation, that wasn't immediately clear to me that that's what's going on. And then what happened in that previous 5 minutes could leave you with excess capacity, and you can consume that during the next 5 minutes, but at a maximum of 3,000 RUs per second. So for that limited period of time. And so, this is shared throughput databases and containers. Which things can this apply to? Is it just manual, or does it play with auto scale nicely as well, or not?
I think it applies to both of those models. And especially with auto scale, like if you're on auto scale, you most probably have a spiky workload where traffic can be pretty unpredictable. So if you have a small collection and you know that you're throughput per partition is less than 3,000, then I see no reason why you wouldn't want to enable this.
Yeah.
If you ever are in an idle period, then you can always benefit from it.
So with burst capacity, that's something I need to enable at the account level?
Yes, that you enable at the account level.
Okay. And so I'm just trying to think if there are any interactions really between burst and auto scale. Just trying to think if there's anything that sounds like it should be sort of fine. So the auto scale gives you the up to 10 times sort of scale range, but then the burst lets you take advantage of unused idle capacity so that hopefully you can do better than you would have otherwise done where there are temporary spikes. Is that a reasonable summary?
Yeah, that's a great way of thinking of like the benefits of both together.
Yep. No, that's really good. Now listen, they're the things that I wanted to ask you about today, but I suppose what else is coming up? Are people going to see you anywhere, or are you speaking at anything that's coming up?
Yeah, so I will probably be at, I'm hosting Cosmos DB Conference in Seattle this upcoming April. I think it's April 16th.
Not far away, just over a month. Yeah.
So I'll
be there. At the time of recording, anyway. Yeah.
I'll be there. We're doing live hosting as well, and I'm also going to be giving a pre-recorded talk on the best practices for multi-tenancy applications on Cosmos DB. Mm-hmm. So hopefully, we'll touch upon some of the topics that I talked about. Yeah. And
what are a few of those things off the top of your head? Any for multi-tenancy things?
I think honestly, every Elasticity feature is best practices for multi-tenant applications. I think the one that stands out as well is the hierarchical partition key. So that'll be a big topic of that presentation.
That was the number one use case I thought of. Mm-hmm. When it first appeared. So but anything else for? I do have a few clients that are sort of software as a service vendors or ISVs, and they're always interested in the multi-tenant thing. So
yeah, we have some great features coming up for multi-tenancy, so I would definitely it's not even in the Elasticity front, but also in the monitoring front, so making it easier for multi-tenancy software ISVs to kind of monitor what each tenant is doing in an easier way than it is right now, because now you can only monitor kind of like at an account or collection level.
Account level. That's really interesting. So the ability to, because that's right, I mean, if the tenant is only a field or a property as part of the documents, I mean, the question is how do you monitor on a on the level of a tenant? So it'd almost need Cosmos DB to have a more of an understanding that maybe, for example, the first level of a hierarchical partition key is something I want to be able to analyze metrics by or something like that. Yeah, that'd actually be really useful if there was anything along those lines. I think the other big area that people tend to struggle with a little bit is how they're going to deal with security, when you're sort of looking at multi-tenant apps as well. And I suppose that's a biggie. And the other one for me is it becomes important to be able to move things around a bit easier than maybe is possible today, where they may have multiple accounts and they want to, move clients between accounts or things like that. Just having a way of doing that sort of thing would be kind of interesting as well. So we've got the Cosmos conference coming up, and you'll be doing a session on that. I'll be looking forward to seeing that. And hey, listen, so thanks so very much for being involved today.
Yeah, this is great. Thank you so much for having me, Greg.
All good.